Welcome back to Practically Intelligent. On today's podcast, we speak with Aryan Agrawal, a partner at South Park Commons, a community for talented technologists, builders, and domain experts, taking their ideas and companies from negative one to zero. Aryan is a former founder herself, and we talked about how people should build with ideas and validate ideas and avoiding common pitfalls when seeking product market fit.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are going to get a lot from our conversation with Aryan. We go from everything between how to think day to day about your company and your idea and the stage at which you're at, all the way to how do you slow down and how does slowing down actually accelerate you towards your goal. So I think we cover a wide range of topics. This one is for everyone really to learn about how they think about themselves and their company and just technology in general. So let's dive right in.
Well, awesome. Aryan, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast. Really looking forward to it.
Thank you guys. Yeah, I'm excited for the conversation.
Well, before we dive in, could you tell us a little bit about South Park Commons and your role there?
South Park Commons is a community focused on learning and exploring. We're also a pre-seed and seed fund. I'm a partner at South Park Commons here in New York. We originally started in San Francisco just about 10 years ago, and we expanded to New York about 3 years ago.
Amazing. And I know you talk a lot about taking founders from negative one to zero and that sort of being your ethos. Can you talk a little bit more about what that means at SPC?
Yeah. South Park Commons actually started, and its genesis is a learning community. And so Ruchi Sanghvi, who founded it, really wanted to create a space for technical, ambitious people to come together and figure out what they want to do with their life. We call what we allow people and enable them to do here is like finding their life's work. And so we invite people to join when there's the kernel of an ambition or an idea that they want to pursue. We give them access to the space, some mentorship, as well as structured and unstructured programming, which enables them to ultimately build conviction in whatever they want to do next. We look for folks that are mostly technical in nature, but truly have, you know, an expertise and a passion and are unafraid of asking questions and exploring their curiosities in a way that can be uncomfortable for a lot of people, requires them being really patient and frankly, spending more time invalidating ideas than validating them.
So the talking about, you know, ambition or an idea, structured or unstructured learning, it really feels like SPC is taking this very, I mean, we can call it holistic, but very broad approach to there is something inside of you that wants to build, that wants to iterate, that wants to produce something that the world can benefit from. And our role is going to be to, it seems to kind of nudge you and guide you in that direction so that you are not only getting better as a person, but your idea is actually getting better as a organization, company. How do you think about the levels or the stages of, let's say, both startups and the founders themselves? Like, how do you think about the stages in which people come to you and the stages in which they go through with you and in to a degree, the stages that they kind of exit SBC having gone through this process? Or do they even exit at the end? Or is the community, that is the goal? Yeah.
I think this is a great question. And I think starting with, like, how do they come to us? I think we have historically gotten so much inbound referrals through kind of the combined network of our partners, as well as the folks that have been early at SPC. But what we look for and for folks that are on their way in are this like intense curiosity and spike. And you know, to give you an example, Tom Brown, who was one of the earliest South Park Commons members, is a great example of someone who who elicited this. He's now one of the founders of Anthropic, but he came to SBC almost 10 years ago, having, you know, exited his company Grouper and really deeply wanting to explore and learn about AI. So, you know, I bring him up as an example because I feel like he is just like such a great example of what the most impressive people coming out of SBC do and how they approach it. He spent time reading papers, deeply learning about how the technology worked before he went and joined OpenAI, before he came back to SBC and then started Anthropic. And it's that intense, unwavering desire to actually learn about a topic and explore it deeply that I think our community really enables us to support. So it's, you know, what you were saying around we're structured, we're unstructured, we're mentors, but so much of it is normalizing this state where you have knowledge, you have domain expertise, you have technical expertise, and you don't exactly know how and where to apply it. But you know that if you were given the physical space, you were surrounded by other naturally curious and technical people, you would be able to, that would unlock it from you. And so that's ultimately, I would say, the like beauty of SBC is not so much that we can guide you, because we'll share, you know, examples of how people have maybe explored the thing that you're interested in the past based on what we've seen. But mostly we kind of give you the freedom to say, okay, I'm here, I'm surrounded by some of the most ambitious and talented people in this physical space, whether you're in San Francisco, New York, or Bangalore now. Let me go and ask the toughest questions now. Let me go figure out the biggest thing that I can do, because it's normal here. It's not like I'm rushing to raise money tomorrow. Everybody here is supportive of that exploration. And in fact, you know, would rather you spend more time here doing that deep exploration than rushing into the first thing that seemingly is working, which I think is what the typical kind of startup journey historically has looked like.
A lot of that is definitely unstructured. I frequently use the phrase the idea maze whenever I'm chatting with a lot of my pre-seed or seed founders that are pre-PMF. But one thing I'd maybe like to ask is how have you seen the kind of post-ChatGPT era, in this era of this AI boom we're in, change folks' approaches to curiosity? Are there particular examples that come to mind? I feel like it was just 5 years ago, there were blog posts kind of talking about how SaaS was, you know, just applying new workflows to new verticals. Now there's so much of more of a surface area for the application of curiosity. So I'm curious, just in the last, you know, two-ish years, how have you seen that unstructured process change at SBC?
It's a really good question. And you actually, you know, I would say a couple of different archetypes have emerged over the past few years. And I'll admit, like, we keep going back to what we have always, you know, historically as SBC gotten excited about, which are people who aren't building for kind of today's technology. So I would say 2 years ago, we certainly were hit with a wave of folks that were like, I can build anything and I can start a company as a result. And I think over time, the folks that have persevered and really come out of that, I'm sure you've seen this as well, are the ones that aren't, that didn't, you know, entertain or pursue the like path of least resistance by adding AI to, you know, an existing workflow and just making a little bit faster, a little bit more optimized. But the folks that I would say are really exciting to work with and have emerged as experts and on the forefront of where it's going are the ones that are thinking about new interfaces for both consumers and businesses, folks that are thinking about how will APIs look in the future when maybe the majority of work done on a computer is not done by a human. Those are the questions that I would say, like, we've lightly explored over the past few years and even continued to and done so more and more now. And those, you know, members, those folks that have gone through SPC have really explored deeply and have come out on the other side with some really interesting ideas and experiences that they're still exploring.
I wonder, because at this point, you know, you were mentioning Tom Brown, which, by the way, not only do I love Anthropic, I also love Grouper. I either didn't know or forgot that he was also involved with Grouper. I used Grouper when I was in college. But for someone like Tom, who came in, to your point, after he had exited Grouper, and we're also talking about in the last couple of years, this new wave of people who said, I think I can build, I have ideas, and I have the tools that I think are necessary to get started. Do you see a dichotomy forming between kind of the experienced founders and the less experienced founders, or does SBC kind of see everyone as, you are passionate, you are creative, you are thinking towards the future? It doesn't matter if you've already exited a company or just now are thinking about entrepreneurship. Or how do you think about those two groups of people differently, if you do at all?
It's a great question because, you know, historically SPC was actually created for the second time founders, or even if not second time founders, but like early operators that had, you know, had massive growth at an early stage tech company. That's why Ruchi created SPC, was for herself. So I'll be honest, actually SPC, especially here in New York, a large percentage of our membership is made up of second, third time founders, people who know the pitfalls, have shown that they like can dedicate 10 years of their life to a business, and aren't done yet. They are very excited to kind of roll up their sleeves and do the next thing, and shoot for a bigger outcome, even maybe than last time. So that audience tends to be, you're right, the ones that kind of come most to mind, because that population is a large part of what makes up SPC. But I think the common thread between first and second time founders that is part of like what I would say is our evaluation criteria when inviting someone to join is this like deep domain expertise that comes from either running a company or comes from working in a field or doing research in a topic that you and only you can speak to. And so I think that, you know, there are definitely differences in the approach that we can coach people through during their time as we observe their exploration, which often looks like, are you asking the right questions? Are you asking questions, or are you going straight to solutions, which is typically what, you know, first.
That's such a big one. Thank you. That's such a big one. Sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, but that idea of like, are you just building a solution? Did you ask a question to get here? I mean, it's a common theme in startups and VCs and communities alike. So that one definitely resonates a lot.
For sure. And especially now, like I've talked a lot about the community. We also run a fellowship program, which is, you know, our pre-seed program where we bring in a cohort of teams. And so we're in the process of evaluating a lot of teams right now. And so what you just said, you know, totally resonates. So many people that we're meeting with and evaluating are definitely building solutions in search of problems. And that is typically not, you know, what we look for when we're bringing people into SPC. But yeah, I think that ultimately in bringing someone in to membership and into the community, and as well as even for our fellowship program, there is a high bar that we keep. And it really comes down to how gritty is this person willing to, you know, say, okay, this could be a good idea. but I'm willing to throw it away in search of something that could be a great idea. And that is like inherently so uncomfortable to do. And so that's part of the criteria, regardless of first or second time founder, that we look for when bringing people in.
One question I have is whether curiosity is a trait or it can be taught. One of the things I had a UX research lead who was a PM at a company I worked at, and it was a seminal life learning for me that curiosity and the ability to ask questions and thoughtful questions in the startup sense, obviously, you know, you can teach maybe a child to be curious by orienting them to certain ideas they're more curious about. But the idea of, can you teach curiosity in the product discovery sense is really interesting to me, because I feel like I've been in some cases taught to be a better PM or even VC through the art of asking maybe thoughtful questions and navigating my own idea maze. But I'm curious because you see so many ambitious, talented people that take so many approaches and have grittiness and so many incredible traits. How do you think about teaching or really helping folks navigate their curiosity in a thoughtful way? Is it a nudge? Is it you think about this? How do you philosophically think about that? That sounds very abstract, but I'm sure you guys think about it philosophically in terms of how you orient your founders and try and give them the right advice.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. I think, you know, we believe that the best founders are the ones that lean into the discomfort of seeking out information that might prove them wrong, and not seeking validation. And so to this, you know, related to this point on curiosity, I think that is inherently, you know, a trait that we look for on when people come in, but you're totally right that you can't screen that perfectly. And so the tests I would say that we do are not tests, but like in terms of coaching and mentorship throughout their experience in the community, it really relies on asking them a lot of questions about how they ended up in a specific kind of decision or path of exploration. And I think that it takes building up a lot of rapport with folks to get them to be willing to admit, okay, you're right. You know, I did some surface level exploration, had a couple of user research interviews, and made a prototype. So like I'm off to the races. And I think the rapport that we try and build is, okay, that's great progress. You know, like you should feel proud, but maybe that's not enough for right now. And maybe there are other questions and other parties we should talk to before we go and go full steam ahead on this one idea. But, you know, to your point and kind of to my earlier point, it's such an uncomfortable process of, you know, of feeling like, okay, I haven't made progress. You know, I'm going back to the drawing board. The idea maze really requires going back to zero multiple times. And that is inherently uncomfortable. And so as we establish and kind of build that, you know, one-on-one relationship with folks, I think it does enable us to help them see when they're speeding through the steps of validation, just because they want to get to a feeling of more kind of conviction, because early conviction by no means means you're building a company that will last 10, 20 years.
Yeah, I would just say I completely agree. I actually think this translates into kind of a thing we talk about at, you know, Seed a lot is these hard versus soft pivots. It's never a straight, usually line to the series A or B or explosive growth. I think a lot of times, actually, it is purely the willingness to go back to zero. Because a lot of times people get stuck in these local maximums, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I actually think of a mutual friend, you know, Doppel, which is an SBC company, had started kind of more in the kind of crypto and NFT space. And they could have stayed in that sort of arena, and apply their technology to so many different things. But it's rare that you get founders that are really willing, I agree, to take the discover being like, no, any idea or presupposition I had of my idea is probably just a local maximum, right? Mm-hmm. I'm having trouble selling to this ICP, and this is what I know. It's really easy to say, oh, let me tweak my existing idea. Let me go back to 0.5. But I think that it's such a good point that I think the hard pivot and pivot to a new idea and continuous validation, I see this because I have these monthly calls with founders, or I sit in on their user research. It's so emotionally difficult once mm-hmm. your ego invested in an idea to admit that you're wrong. And I think it actually is maybe, you know, you just pointed out, but 100% agree. It's one of the hardest things to do. And a lot of it is a emotional awareness and trait that I think we don't talk about as much, but it's so hard to say I was completely wrong. Now let me go do something completely different. But people who can do that and are not ego invested in just their idea, but mm-hmm. instead in an outcome and what they want to produce is super important.
What kind of advice or framework can someone think about or use when they are maybe or potentially caught in this? Oh, I just need to your point, I if I just get some early traction, I think that'll be enough to kind of give me that confidence boost and maybe take this to an investor or someone else. Maybe two parts. A, can you catch yourself in that loop? Or does that usually have to come from someone else, just experience from having it before? Like, are there steps you can take to really think about, am I caught in this loop of I'm just seeking early validation, and that's hindering me from perhaps exploring something different? I'll start there. Like, how can you catch yourself in that loop?
I think catching yourself in the loop is maybe one of the hardest things. So I'll provide like a framework that we introduce and kind of reintroduce multiple times throughout, you know, a member's membership or if they're in our fellowship program. But we constantly encourage them to marry both like bottoms up and tops down approach to building, which is like core to, I would say, a lot of our onboarding and workshops that we do. Bottoms up meaning what you said, like build the early prototype, talk to customers, get that like early insight from customers on what it is that you're building that's, and like what problem are you solving for them? And like use that and muscle to continuously iterate on the idea and who you're building for, because you're so close to the customer when you have a tangible product and theses that you're trying to validate or invalidate. At the same time, we emphasize and do a lot of coaching on the tops down approach as well, which requires you to zoom out and imagine, where is the world going? How am I skating to where the puck is going? And if I were to build the maximalist version of the thing that this is an early kernel of today, what would that look like? And how can I build conviction in that narrative and shop that narrative around to your smartest founder friends, your, you know, experts in the field, us. And like, I think that is at a high level, one of the approaches that when we see founders really lean into doing both of those things, they end up converging on something that is far more interesting and exciting also for them to want to persevere through, and gives them a lot more direction than if they kind of just did the bottoms up approach of talk to customers, build something they want, and try and keep like iterating from there. And it also helps them if they have this long-term view of like where the industry is going or what they would look like if they were successful in 10 years, what would that business look like? They can realize, what are questions I should be asking today that would validate whether that is a vision? Like, that's a real possibility versus building the thing today. And then, you know, a year or two down the road realizing, oh wait, there's not a market here. Like the biggest version of what I'm building today is actually not that big. why have I spent so much time doing this? Although 1 to 2 years is not that much time in the grand scheme of things. It's much better than if they spend 5 years getting to like 100 million in ARR, and then much worse than, yeah, doing that and then just stagnating out. But I think that kind of dual exercise enables them to answer the right questions and figure out the right idea to pursue.
What a good framework, because it's on one hand, it sounds so easy, right? To think, oh, you know, you have to think about it from your low-level prototypes, you're talking to your customers, all the way to, well, where's this going? You know, what's the future going to look like if things progress in this way? And you should. I mean, when you hear it out loud, it says, well, of course I should be thinking about that. Like, why wouldn't I be thinking about that? But I'm sure, you know, Aaron's kind of nodding along. That's not easy to do day to day. It's not easy to sit yourself down and remind yourself, when was the last time you thought about the logical conclusion to this or the maximalist version of what you are building? That doesn't, I mean, for me at least, as someone who also builds products and builds applications, that doesn't come to me naturally. I can tell you that right now. What does come naturally is the today, is the next week, is the call it next year for short-term development. But sometimes I have to, and for myself, it's through something like journaling or something where I physically force myself to sit down and write something down, is when I start to convince my brain to say, why? Where is this going? Why are you doing this? You know, what does it look like to take this 10 years from now? And is that what you want to be doing, A? And B, is that a place that you think this company or idea should be at? So it's both easy, and at the same time, that's a really hard concept. And I think to your point, when you said, you know, we introduce and reintroduce and reintroduce, it's a lot of it, I think, is a muscle memory. And I guess, without naming names, you don't have to, but what does it look like when someone doesn't follow that framework, or when they take either of those approaches, bottom up or top down? What happens when you take either one of those to their extreme without focusing on the other? Like what can happen?
I mean, starting with the, I would say, tops down approach. And then if you only do tops down and you don't, you know, marry that with bottoms up, you get a lot of folks that they can, you know, be a great storyteller. They can paint an ambitious vision, but they actually have no idea where to start. And that will kill a company. That will kill, you know, morale. That will kill motivation. But that will probably be a bit of a longer, like in the early days, death, in the sense that, you know, they've convinced themselves that they have this big idea, but they haven't been able to make progress to show that ideas something that they're capable of building. I feel like because our mode and our community is mostly technical, we rarely run into those instances because we're constantly telling people, you know, go and build it. You know, you've been talking now for a couple of weeks, like, let's go build something and put it in front of users, or at least show us. Like, let's get into that. Let's build that muscle and like let's start getting some early sign that you can iterate quickly in the actual build of this. The, you know, the on the flip side of if folks are bottoms up and not really thinking tops down, actually can, you know, my first company before I joined SPC on the investing side, certainly fell into that trap. We were a rental marketplace for Indian clothing in the US, which was to us, massive problem, had a lot of pent up demand, had like six figures monthly GMV, were growing really quickly. And we took a minute to think, where does this go? Actually challenged by Ruchi from SPC. And we came up with a lot of different versions, frankly, of like, you know, we could build technology for rental companies. We could build a rental for everything. Like, you know, this population, you name it, we came up with it. But we never really had conviction in one of them. And, you know, maybe there are many reasons why the company would have failed in different circumstances. We failed because COVID hit and there was no more business for it. But if I reflect and honestly look back, I think we would have 100% been that example of a company where, you know, bottoms up, we were building something people wanted. We had early signs of traction and customer love. But to make it kind of that $1 billion plus venture outcome, we didn't have conviction in like where those two things met.
Speaking of building something people want, and your past company, Y Combinator is something that you and I both share in common. And one of the things I very distinctly I remember very few hard single line lessons from YC. Not to say they didn't give me any, but very few of them stuck. One of them was a very strong conviction from their side that solo founders are more likely, just both correlationally and causationally, are more likely to not see their startup through all the way. I'm not saying I agree or disagree with that, but part of why it reminded me of that right now was I think of my own company that went through YC, and we had two founders. And genuinely, as you were talking, I was thinking, you know what? I guess I kind of was the bottom-up guy, and he was the top-down guy. And it kind of took two of us in a room to merge that together. So my question is more, is that also your takeaway from that lesson? Is that it does generally take more than one person in a room to really think of both of those? Or is that something you want to instill into each individual, this idea that you should all of you should always be thinking top down, bottom up at certain points in the company? Or is that better kind of left specialized per, call it, founding member of the team?
That's interesting, you know, and it's actually giving me, it's definitely food for thought, you know, because I do find myself interacting mostly with the CEO after they raise and kind of constantly challenging them on these two questions. And yeah, maybe it would actually be better to work with both co-founders. So that's definitely a thought that's going to go through my head. Rob, but to answer your question, I'd say we certainly, you know, we have some amazing solo founders. So our thesis is less around like, oh, you must have a co-founder, because there are some special individuals that have broken that mold. Personally, I think it's more about kind of, can you persevere solo? And nobody cares about the company as much as you do, or as much as the founders. And I have to tell this to our companies all the time, like, nobody cares about your company. And I care about it when you remind me to, when you like deploy me, you send me an email, we set up our one-on-ones. But it's impossible for me to actively care about your business. And so for me, it's like, I encourage co-founders, certainly on the complementary skills aspect. So there might be like a different sides of your brains that is emerging here, which like does naturally fall into like bottoms up and tops down, like big vision, big picture people versus like the details. Like that actually probably does emerge as like complementary traits that would lead to being able to successfully do these two things at once. But yeah, I do think that my deeper rationale for like find a co-founder, unless you are this like unicorn that can do it all, because waking up every morning when things are going really badly, you're just going to be more motivated by that person who can carry the load when you're not at your best, and vice versa. But it is interesting to add that layer, which I'm definitely going to think about now.
One thing that I was thinking when you were talking about kind of living in the future is, well, first I was thinking there's this great chart of all the kind of major kind of current, you know, Decacorn Plus businesses. And it shows the year they were funded and the most hyped category in venture the year they were funded. And I think it's so funny because Tesla, Anthropic, OpenAI, Anthropic and OpenAI were, I remember seeing those rounds when the press release came across. I was like, cool, this is sci-fi. Like, how do we know this will impact the world? But I think there's something specifically applicable to our audience and yours, because right now there's a lot of analysis paralysis because the future is so uncertain and there's so many different things to weigh. And I find that future proofing your idea is harder than ever given the pace of progress. And so your example of research papers is super interesting, but it made me think, are there ideas or ways of future proofing your idea outside of, again, just being in the curiosity maze? But how are you, or how, any advice to builders navigating that uncertainty? I know so many people who may have an idea, but again, they hit this local maximum. They may do everything right, but the slope of, I find, progress, even in this last year alone, is shocking. And it's really incredible and kind of whipsawing. And so any advice to folks who are, you know, trying to future-proof their company and different elements of curiosity they can have, or any advice for them as someone who sees many, many types of this sort of iteration?
I think that this might feel like a bit of a cop-out answer, but I think the best way to future-proof is to lean on your unfair advantage in an industry or your unique insight. And that's part of, you know, what we look for when we're meeting with teams and we're meeting with potential members or investments is, why is this person well suited to tackle this problem? And that comes from like hard earned insights that they've developed from their career or some past experience. So for us, it's like, take those learnings and compound them. Don't start from zero. Like, don't go and tackle something that's, you know, exciting today, because unless you are going to take the approach of Tom Brown and deeply, deeply learn and deeply research, things are moving so fast and they're, you might as well start with like where you have a leg up. And that typically comes from, you know, you being very reflective on your career and the domain that you know well, and being very curious about it to uncover the things that other people aren't thinking about. I don't know if that answer is very satisfactory, but like, I do find that that tends to be the highest likelihood of getting to an outcome you want, is if you lean on your learnings, you lean on kind of these hard-earned insights to tackle something ambitious.
I mean, I think that makes a ton of sense. It comes down to this idea that we should be learning from our past, admitting when we're wrong, reflecting, and always thinking in different ways. Easier said than done, right? I think that's a lot of the ethos here is like, yeah, we've been told our whole lives in a lot of ways to, you should be learning from your mistakes, but we don't. We don't always do that. And it's, you have to be reminded to do it. You need a co-founder to remind you to do it. You need SBC coaches and mentors to sometimes remind you to do it, to say, hey, remember, you are supposed to care the most about this. So you are the one supposed to be leaning on your own learnings to figure out what went wrong and what to do next time to make it a little bit easier on yourself. And the hard work is a lot of the time, it's on you, and we can guide you. We can tell you what the hard work is, but the work is hard. And you think building a company is hard, It is. And being the founder of a company that you're building is even harder, if that makes sense. There's a lot more to navigate than you really realize. I think this is a lot of great advice for our listeners. And whether, again, whether you're first time, second time, 10th time founder, practitioner, someone who's just willing and passionate about a space, I think anyone can walk away from this conversation with just a lot more reflection and tools and frameworks for how to think about what they should be doing tomorrow, next week, and next year. Arian, thanks so much for being on the show. This has been really, frankly, really enlightening, and I think is going to be really powerful for a lot of people.
Thank you both. This was such a fun conversation. Yeah, I really enjoyed it, and excited to collaborate more.
Where can people learn more about SBC?
So following us on Twitter probably gives you the freshest sense of what is getting our team excited, South Park Commons on Twitter, but our website is southparkcommons.com. And we have applications open, you know, year round for our membership, for our community, and then for our fellowship program. They're open twice a year. And yeah, I mean, we want to meet anybody who has that bold ambition to create the future that we all are excited to live in. We're not shy at meeting people really early.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.